1450 WHTC, Holland's hometown station, welcomes you to Talk of the Town. Subbing one more time for Juke Van Oss today, here is former state legislator and current Republican National Committee man, Dave Ajima.
Good morning, everyone. This morning, we're going to start out with Holland District Judge, Judge Brad Canall. He's going to talk about some judicial issues. What do you got on the docket, Judge?
Well, I don't have too much on the docket today. You and I were having a chance to chat ahead of time about some broader issues regarding judicial activism, and we were talking about some of the more local issues related to cultural issues and some drunk driving you had mentioned also.
Right. Remember, folks, this is a call-in show. Feel free to call in at 395-1450. Yeah, one of the issues I have is, for example, I hear a lot of people, and I got calls when I was a state legislator. Hey, my son just got caught. He just had a couple beers, and he was eating, and it's just past the .08. What do they get for a first-time drunk driving offense? What happens typically with an individual like that?
It's within the discretion of the judge. There are certain mandatory penalties, including mandatory driver's license suspension. The statute says that you can get up to 93 days in jail. Typically, in a first offense situation, before we will sentence anyone who's convicted, we go through an alcohol assessment process because I need to know whether this was an isolated incident where the person had one too many, or it's evidence of a more serious ongoing alcohol problem, because then we have resources available that we want to make available to them, in fact, that will mandate that they take advantage of, because it's an issue of community safety, and we need to keep as many drunk drivers off the road as possible.
So if it was just the first time and there's no other case, what would typically happen?
If the person doesn't demonstrate an ongoing alcohol problem, if the person is over 21 years old, generally speaking, on a first offense, the court will impose fines and costs. We don't have the probation resources to put everybody on probation that we'd probably like to. So in a first offense situation, fines and costs, it's expensive. It's probably about $850.
Okay, another quick question here. We have one caller, I believe, calling in.
Yes. We got somebody that didn't want to give his name, but go ahead, caller. You're on the air on 1450 WH. Oops, we lost him. Sorry there. We'll get that caller back in a minute.
Okay. While we're getting that caller back, I'd like to ask you a couple other questions. One of the issues that was big for me as a state legislator was illegal immigration. And I understand that Ottawa County obviously has a lot of farmers, and some of them do tend to hire some illegals, but what I found was when I dealt with ICE and so forth, they would say, for example, if Ottawa County Sheriff caught an illegal, ICE would say, well, he's committed a felony. Has he done this or he done that? And if they said no, he said, just let him go. We don't have the assets to take care of him. Is that true? What do you do when you find somebody that's an illegal? What's the typical thing that would happen in a court of law?
Yeah, that hasn't been my experience. Generally, when a person is arrested, if they are an illegal immigrant, ICE will place a detainer on them, and the person will have to, when they resolve their local legal matter, still be facing detention and deportation through that process through ICE. The Sheriff's Department uniformly runs checks on people who are arrested to determine whether, in fact, they're in the country legally or not.
Okay, I think we have a caller.
Yes.
Caller, you're on?
Yes. What about if you run a red light and someone dies? What do you normally plead for that? Guilty or not guilty, or what happens after that?
There is an offense called traffic infraction causing death. It used to be known as negligent homicide. It was the same sort of thing where obviously the death of the person was not intended, but there was a violation of the law, a violation of the motor vehicle code, and that it's a criminal offense.
Do they go to jail?
They can. It always depends on the circumstances, but it carries a potential jail term, yes.
Okay.
Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does.
Okay. We were talking a little bit earlier. I'd just like to get into that a little bit more about the ICE. My dealings with ICE were that they don't have the people, and they've been cut back, and they can't deal with all the illegals that they find. Now, just as a little background for those of you who are listening, I think it was Hoover, Truman, and Eisenhower actually deported 15 million illegals from the United States. Now, today, Obama says we have 11.7 million, and we can't possibly deport them all, even though in the past we've deported up to 15 million of them, making room for jobs and so forth, and we don't pay for health care, education, welfare, jails, and human services. So you're telling me that in your court system, if you find somebody that's illegal, that ICE generally does come and pick them up?
That's been my experience, that ICE will have a hold on them so that if a person is in jail, even if they could bond out on the criminal charge that brought them to jail, they won't be able to bond out of jail. They will be turned over to ICE when the local criminal charges are resolved.
So by the time they got to your court, they'd already been convicted of probably a felony, not just a misdemeanor. Is that correct?
No. Our court, all of the criminal cases start in our court, the district court. Felony cases will go up to the circuit court. They'll come into our court for initial arraignment, so we get them at the beginning of the
So even as a misdemeanor, ICE will pick them up? You found that to be true?
If they are in jail, yes. If the sheriff's department will determine that they are not legal, they will contact ICE. ICE will place a hold on them. When they're done with the local proceedings, then it's up to ICE what they want to do with that person.
Okay, now what percentage of those, when you're done with them, what does ICE typically do? What percentage do they actually come? Do you got any idea?
I really don't know.
You don't know? Okay. You were talking about judicial activism, and I know that we as legislators make the law. It's your job to enforce that law through the court system. But we have a caller here right now, I think, from Holland. Kurt is on the line. Go ahead, Kurt.
Yeah. Hello, Judge. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Kurt.
Good. A while back, I called before, my wife got a ticket for supposedly running a stop sign, which she did not do. My wife would not do that. But when she went to court, the police officer said, I was stopped, I saw her run the stop sign, and I wrote her a ticket. And the judge said, well, she's shown her burden of proof. Well, my wife went where the officer was supposed to be parked and told the judge she couldn't see behind the bushes that were at the bank. And the judge said, it doesn't matter, she showed the burden of proof. There was no proof shown. If an officer's word, gospel, and whatever they say is exactly a burden of proof proven by the police officer, even though the wife did not do the crime?
Well, in a motor traffic case, it's a civil infraction. So the burden of proof is not a criminal burden. It's proof by the preponderance of the evidence, or 51% of the evidence. A police officer's testimony is not entitled to any greater weight than any other person's testimony. The trier of fact, whether it's a judge or a magistrate, has to judge the credibility of the witnesses who testify. Though many times we recognize the fact that the police are trained to be skillful observers, and that they may, in any particular circumstance, have a better trained eye for those sort of things, but it doesn't mean that a police officer is more believable than another person. The testimony is weighed on the same basis. And that's the toughest thing for us judges to do, where two people are offering testimony under oath that is different from each other. They may be mistaken as to the facts. One or more may be deliberately lying about what the facts are. But it's one of the toughest things we have to do, is how to gauge who's being truthful with us and who doesn't. Usually the devil's in the details, that the truthful person has better command of the details.
So we should have taken pictures of where the police officer was supposedly parked. Would that have helped? Because for the police officer to see her, the police officer would have had to have been parked across the sidewalk and been blocking the path of the sidewalk.
Sure. Any amount of evidence that's relevant goes to that preponderance standard.
So what we have to do is find something more than the word of the police officer, because the police officer is going to get judged as better than the person that committed the offense.
I don't think I said that, that we tried to judge the testimony the same.
When the judge said, she proved burden of doubt. Well, proof of burden, that the officer didn't do anything but say, I saw her wheels move.
Well, what the judge said is that he or she found that testimony more credible than the other testimony.
Oh, okay. All right, thanks for your time.
Sure.
Okay, another issue that we were talking about just before we got on the air is judicial activism. Why don't you explain what that is to the listeners out there? And remember, this is your hometown radio station, 1450. Feel free to call in, 395-1450. Judicial activism.
Judicial activism, in my view, isn't about politics, because in the early part of the 20th century, most of the judicial activists were very conservative justices, where in the latter part of the 20th century, in this century, most of the judicial activists are politically liberal. What judicial activism means is going beyond the letter of the law that's written. I'm reading a really interesting book by Justice Scalia right now on legal interpretation, and it's not a question of what the legislature intended. It's not a question of what the legislature might have done where this unique situation came up or what would be best for society in general. It's a question more of English grammar and English usage. You read what the words in the statute say and what the meaning should be attached to those words. And it's a complicated process, but it doesn't need to be as complicated as many judges make it when they're trying to impose their own social or political views on a particular piece of legislation.
Okay, we have a cell phone caller on the line. You're on. Go ahead on WHTC.
Yeah, what are we doing with these people with these mental issues now that are... doing all these shootings and stuff like this?
You know, that's one of the most frustrating things that we have to deal with in the court system is people who are homeless with mental health issues who come into the court, and at least in my experience, come into our court on a variety of less serious issues involving trespass or disorderly conduct or something of that nature, where we really don't have a good response by the judicial system, and you don't want to house someone in a jail where the primary problem is a mental health issue. Some courts have started a mental health court on the model of the successful drug and sobriety courts, and I would like to see that perhaps approached in Ottawa County, because it provides a better linkage between the people and the mental health services that they need. The problem in many cases is that with government funding not at optimum levels, that the mental health providers aren't able to see all of these people. The statutes in recent past and the judicial interpretations make it very difficult to have a person committed under the Mental Health Act. So many people with some fairly serious mental health problems are out and about in the community with no good community response to them. And as you pointed out in your call, there's a potential that these people are going to be doing something much more dangerous than is typically involved. And how we observe that is, how we can deal with that is a tough call.
We're going to be coming up on a break here very shortly. This is 1450 WHTC, Holland's hometown station. This is Dave Agema sitting in.
As the leaves cover your lawn, we've got you covered with the latest news, sports, and weather around the clock. No rake required. 1450 WHTC, Holland's hometown station, and WHTC.com.
And this is Dave Agema sitting in for Juke Panos once again. We have Judge Brad Canole on the line at the present time. Feel free to call on 395-1450. I have another question for you here, Judge. Can you give me a Supreme Court response to Obamacare? How did they go through that, and what was the process, and what's the conclusion, or however you want to bring this up?
Sure. And you know from your experience in the state legislature that anything that the legislature passes and is signed by the governor or the president is presumed to be constitutional. Now, obviously, the Affordable Health Care Act was one that was controversial from the start.
Right.
Once it passed the Congress, there were challenges to it, and the Supreme Court, the U.S. Supreme Court, is the final arbiter of whether a piece of legislation is constitutional or not.
However, does not the Supreme Court even have to rely on the Constitution? They can't rule on something other than the Constitution if it's not constitutional. We do have an anonymous caller here we'll get into right now.
Okay.
Go ahead, caller.
Good. Thank you for taking my call.
Not a problem.
I'm having a problem with, and I've not seen anyone ticketed for it, and if you've already considered this morning, I'm sorry, I just tuned you in a couple of minutes ago. flashing red lights to make a left-hand turn at many of the intersections involving highway situations as well, it's very obvious that people are not coming to a complete stop at the flashing red, as we were always taught in driver's ed. And my fear is, if it hasn't happened yet, it will happen, that the stream of traffic through the flashing red encourages people not to pay attention to oncoming traffic, and somebody's going to be in a serious accident. The Holland City Police Department, when I asked them about it, pretty much said, and I say pretty much because they wouldn't commit specifically, but they're not going out of their way to enforce that law. Or is it no longer a law? And then I'm curious, how are you going to deal with this in court when you're faced with it, or maybe you have been already?
We do a lot of work in the district court on alleged violations of the traffic laws. And I think the response you got from law enforcement is we've got X number of officers out there, and we sort of have to prioritize things, so we can't leave a police cruiser at every flashing red light to make sure that people are complying, though they do selective enforcement at many times. And I agree with you on the call that it seems like lately more and more people are either running red lights, going through the yellow light late, or ignoring the mandatory stop part of a flashing red light. But the traffic code hasn't changed. The traffic code says that you stop for a flashing red light before you can proceed.
Does that answer your question, caller?
Well, it does, except the police department has obviously not gone out of their way to inform the public that we don't approve of this, we don't appreciate this, you will be ticketed if the situation arises and an officer happens to see it. And it's that, even that sort of statement periodically, I think, has the potential to save a lot of accidents and perhaps even a number of lives, and certainly a lot of prospective tickets, I guess. I've always struggled with things that aren't fair. And I think this is one area where, because the law is not generally being enforced, the general public comes to a conclusion about what's good and right and legal and fair. And when the situation actually arises with an officer not being able to look the other way and give the ticket, whose fault is that, really?
Well, I don't think officers ever look the other way. And I don't think it's a question of going out of their way to avoid giving the ticket. They just can't be everywhere at once. I'm not aware of any situation where the officer observed an obvious violation and didn't respond by stopping the vehicle. They may issue a warning rather than a ticket, but I think that they would, whenever they can do it and they're not busy doing something else, they'll stop a driver who's violating the motor vehicle code. Thanks for your call.
Okay, appreciate your call. We were talking about the Supreme Court and how they arrived at their Obamacare, Affordable Care Act. Go ahead with that one.
Okay, sort of going from smaller issues to larger issues.
There you
but
go.
They do pass, the Supreme Court is the final arbiter as to the constitutionality of any piece of legislation. And obviously this is a controversial piece of legislation. The decision itself was obviously not a unanimous decision, and what will happen later on remains to be seen.
We have another call online?
Yeah, somebody wants to follow up on that flashing light discussion there. Go ahead, you're on the air on 1450 WHTC.
Yeah. Good morning, guys. According to this guy that was just talking, you have to stop. But nobody really does. Now with the LED lights, they're having a flashing yellow light left turn. So, you know, you don't have to stop, really.
Yeah, I get confused because sometimes the left-hand arrow goes on at the end of the green. Sometimes it goes on at before the green starts, and I'm never really sure what the next color is going to be as I'm approaching that left turn lane. But obviously common sense says that in those situations you have to proceed cautiously, and police are aware of what the motor vehicle code requires, and if you're violating, you're likely to get stopped.
One more question. Now, on M45 in Port Chelan, you got a railroad track with three sets of lights, or two sets of lights.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you can make a right after stop on a red. Now, am I allowed to go through that railroad track red and then stop and then look for traffic and then it was clear to go?
I think there's a sign at the tracks that says that you're not to cross the tracks if the light was red. I think most people just sneak across the tracks and then make their right on red. But if there's a sign telling you not to do it, you probably can't.
Well, I asked an officer that one time, and he says, yeah, you can make a right on after stop on a red. But he says you're going through that red light. But if there's no train coming, what's the big deal, you know?
It's still a red light.
Let's get to another call. Good morning. You're on 1450 WHTC with Dave Ajima and Brad Knoll.
I just got to change the subject for a minute. I think the Holland police, man, they do their job best as they can. But it's Monday night, right by Baker's Office. I got hit on my bicycle. The guy kept going. So I think the Holland police, the ambulance people in the Holland Hospital did a good job, and the Holland police don't give enough credit for doing their job, so people should respect the uniform and the men and women in the uniform. They should respect them more. Thank you.
Thank you very much for the call. Good morning. You're on 1450 WHTC with Brad Knoll and Dave Ajima.
Yeah, I just wonder, I'd like to ask the judge, has he ever had a traffic ticket?
Oh, yes.
What'd you do?
Paid it.
What did you do?
Speeding.
Speeding, yeah. How much were you over?
I think I'll assert my Fifth Amendment rights there.
Well, let me ask you another question here. For all of us speed demons, like I was a fighter pilot, and I believe speed is life, because the faster we go, the harder it is to hit us. If the speed limit is 70 miles an hour, is it true that, and I'm not trying to incite anything here, but most of the time you will not get pulled over if you're doing 75 or 76? Do you ever see a ticket that they're writing you over for five over?
That's been my experience. I think I've seen one for five over.
Really?
But
officer's name?
Well, you can have you can have pretext traffic stops also. The police do that frequently if they think a person is running drugs or something like that, that they'll make a traffic stop, not because they wanted to stop them for going 5 miles over the speed limit, but they wanted to have access to that vehicle. And Michigan law recognizes that.
Let me get to another call here. You're on with Brad Knoll and Dave Ajima on 1450 WHTC.
Hi. Let me turn this radio down.
Thank you very much. We are on an 8-second delay, by the way, for all of our listeners. Right. So if you do get on, turn down the radio so that you aren't confused by talking over the phone and hearing yourself 8 seconds later.
Right. I have a question. Now, district court only deals with traffic accidents and traffic fines, DUIs, things like that, not with any criminal offense. Is that correct?
No, that's not correct. Every criminal offense, whether it's a misdemeanor or felony, starts in the district court.
I'm talking about felony.
A felony charge starts in the district court. The district court has to determine whether there's probable cause to believe they committed that offense at a preliminary examination before the case is bound over to the circuit court. But we handle all misdemeanor cases involving 1 year or less as the maximum possible penalty.
Uh-huh.
Okay. And we also handle a variety of other matters, civil matters, landlord-tenant matters, small claims court, that sort of thing.
Okay, well, one thing I'm kind of wondering is, why is Mr. Ajima asking you about the Supreme Court when obviously you do not have probably the training and authority to speak for
I can only speak as a lawyer and a judge and as a student of the law and someone who enjoys reading Supreme Court cases, but I don't want to hold myself out as an expert, and if I did, I apologize for that.
Right, and the reason for the question is he knows the process. I was trying to get to the process, but we had phone calls between he could get to the process of how it really works and so forth, so I'm not asking him for his opinion, even though I'd love to hear it, basically, I wanted to know what the process is so people understand how it goes down the tubes here, so we end out with a judgment, if you will.